Welcome back to Tim Fridman's 70s Rock Conversations. I'm your host, Tim Fridman. Frank Austin and I are excited about bringing you classic conversations all winter long. This week, we're heading back to season one, a very early episode for us, and one we are excited about bringing back to you, Steely Dan, our featured artist. Next week, The Who. Enjoy. I'm sure you've heard about the death of Jeff Beck at the age of 78. What a fantastic guitarist. Frankie had Jeff Beck and Freeway Jam as one of his best instrumentals when we had that segment not too long ago on Tim Fridman's 70s Rock Conversations. Guitar virtuoso, played with the Yardbirds, and of course, flat out one of the best guitarists ever. He could make that guitar sing, couldn't he? Also, on drums, Robbie Bachman of Bachman Turner Overdrive. He was with the band long after Randy left and into the 80s. Robbie was the drummer. He was 69 years old and passed away last Friday night. In 2015, the Hall of Fame inductees really ran the gamut, didn't they? I'll run down the list and then get your thoughts. Paul Butterfield Blues Band. Lou Reed, as a solo artist, he had already been inducted with the Velvet Underground, as you recall. Stevie Ray Vaughan and Double Trouble. Bill Withers. Ringo Starr was not inducted in the Performers category, but in the Musical Excellence category, which I believe would be something akin to Lifetime Achievement. So, first up, Green Day. We've talked about them a little bit here and there.
We have. And they're an excellent band. I don't, must say, I don't know much about them other than Dookie. I get past that, and I start to run dry on my Green Day prompts.
Time of Your Life. You ever saw the last compilation
right,
of Seinfeld?
Right.
That was on there, 1998. Oh, yeah. Great song. Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. I'm surprised she's in and not Pat Benatar.
Yeah. Definitely not nearly as many hits, and probably not as important to rock and roll history. The only thing that I can think of that goes with her is the fact that she was on, that she was the inspiration for the Sunday Night Football themes. That seems to be about it.
Waiting All Day for Sunday Night.
Waiting All Day, which of course comes off for her big hit, I Love Rock and Roll.
I like that song. She was in a couple movies. I like The Motels too, and The Motels aren't in the Rock Hall of Fame.
Exactly.
To me, in that early 80s, it was Pat Benatar and everyone else as far as a rock and roll singer is concerned. Maybe Stevie Nicks fits that category too. But Joan Jett, she was nice, but I don't know if she was deserving. That's when I started getting a little frustrated with the Rock Hall inductees. Chicago hadn't been in yet, Moody Blues.
Doobie Brothers and a lot of others. Then some that still aren't in, yeah.
And that'll be a really good subject as we go along. Stevie Ray Vaughan, the late Stevie Ray Vaughan, and Double Trouble.
Hey, 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 mama, look at that sip. Out in the backyard, feel like sip. Hey, 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 hey. Little sister. Hey, 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 hey. Little sister. What about the neighbors? What they gonna say? Stop little sister getting carried away. Hey, hey, hey. Little sister. Hey, 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 hey. Little sister. Shaking like a tree, running like a log.
Terrific guitar player he was, taken from us far too young, I think at about age 35, was it?
Mm-hmm.
In a helicopter crash.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, tremendous music there.
Bill Withers just passed away not too long ago.
That's right.
A couple of great songs right off the bat in the 70s. Lean On Me and Use Me.
The one they play all the time now is Lovely Day.
Lovely Day.
Yes, that's on a couple of commercials. I believe.
Great voice. Ringo Starr is still going strong. He's 80 years old. John Lennon would have been 80 years old.
That's right.
As we record, and the big tributes to him and his music, Forever Young. Ringo aged well. He's still performing.
He still is, and he still looks like he could go out and do just about anything at this point.
I think touring keeps you young.
I think so.
In certain circles. I mean, if you're not going to, a lot of these guys who have been around a while have dispensed with the partying.
Exactly.
The womanizing. They just go out and play their rock and roll. Our spotlight year, 1972, and we're going to start off with some great one-hit wonders. First up, Apollo 100, with the song they brought to number 6 in March of that year, the Johann Sebastian Bach-inspired Joy. Frankie, your thoughts?
This is a nice song. Nothing wrong with it.
What did you think about popcorn and hot butter?
Well, and again, you know, those are just the ones that hit the top 40, and you listen to them a few times, and then they're gone, and nobody really misses them.
We talked about some of the great instrumental rock songs of 1973 not too long ago, and I think we were getting warmed up for 73, because those two songs, while good, and you've heard them on commercials over the years, but... I don't think they would qualify in the same category as, say, Frankenstein or Jessica, but
still, for the
time, very good. Speaking of which, what I thought was a very good one-hit wonder, I'm surprised JoJo Gunn didn't really do more. The former members of Spirit, Jay Ferguson and Mark Andes.
That's right.
Run, Run, Run.
What a great song that was. And, of course, like you said, they came out of Spirit and did this side category. And then... Also, Jay Ferguson went on to have some hits on his own, and also he does a lot of soundtracks, probably most known for the NCIS Los Angeles soundtrack, so he's got a lot of talent there, and it's too bad that he never really hit the big time, because the bands he were in were all good, JoJo Gunn being one of them, but it never took off for him.
Mark Andes was also in JoJo Gunn, went on to become a member of Firefall, and then, remember the big hair videos of the 80s? He was the guy with the long blonde hair and These Dreams or What About Love, so he joined Heart and had a great career with them. Hot Rod Lincoln, Commander Cody and his Lost Planet Airmen. I still don't know why they got together, why they created this song, but I still like it. And as a 12-year-old, I thought it was really cool.
It's a fantastic song, and I do have a version on my playlist that has Bill Kirchen, who is the lead guitar player for them, doing Hot Rod Lincoln, and he goes through the entire history of rock and country guitarists, calling them out one at a time and then playing a little snippet from them. So it's a really great, great thing to put together. And every time I hear it, it reminds me of this song. And, you know, it's a big hit for Commander Cody.
My pappy said, son, you're going to drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving that Hot Rod Lincoln. heard the story of the hot rod race with the Fords and Lincolns was setting the pace. That story is true, I'm here to say I was driving that Model A. It's got a Lincoln motor and it's really souped up. That Model A body makes it look like a pup's. Got 8 cylinders and uses them all. Got overdrive, just won't stall. With a 4-barrel carb and a dual exhaust, with 4 living gears you can really get lost. Got safety tubes, but I ain't scared. The brakes are good, tires fair. Pulled out of San Pedro late one night. The moon and the stars was shining bright. We was driving up Grapevine Hill, passing cars like they was standing still.
So all three of those songs, Joy, Run, 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 Hot Rod Lincoln, all out in the spring, early spring to late spring of 72. And then it wasn't a one-hit wonder by any means, but Sammy Davis Jr., the song he hated and didn't want to record, The Candyman, went to number one in June of 72. He had to be talked into recording that. I don't know why he didn't like it so much. It was from, you know, the movie.
Absolutely.
But he hated it.
You know, sometimes the ones you hate the most are the biggest hits for you. Sad to say, but it's true.
Hot Rod Lincoln went to number 9. The cover version of the song was originally recorded way back in 1955. Before we get to the top stuff of 1972, the breakout artists and the like, some of the not-so-great songs, we already hit The Candyman. I liked it, but I mean, you know, I'm still mystified that song went to number one. It was probably because of the movie and people were just interested in something different from
Sammy. And it would probably hit a certain demographic at the time that was looking to kind of get back into popular music. So, you know, like our parents.
As we cruised into the summer, Mouth and McNeil had their one and only hit, How Do You Do?
That's right.
Chuck Berry's My Ding-a-Ling. That was also number one.
And I believe that was his only number one of all time. Is that not the one of the saddest things of all time? A potty song like My Ding-a-Ling becomes your only number one hit after he basically invented rock and roll, for God's sake.
Very strange. They played it in the wee hours of the morning, I remember, at Wixie, because I don't know if it would garner a lot of airplay during the day. I think the parents would have flipped out hearing that song. Looking Glass, they didn't have just one hit. They had a couple of hits. One of them charted later on that year, I do believe, in the top 40 somewhere. But this one spent like 6 weeks at number two and finally hit number one later on in the summer for a week. Brandy.
Oh, yeah.
Song of the Summer, one of them.
That's right. Still being played on commercials, regular rotation.
And, of course, Gilbert O'Sullivan, our friend from Ireland, who kept Brandy out of the top spot and scored a number one hit for 6 weeks, which was also the number two song of the year, according to Billboard. Alone Again, in parentheses, Naturally.
There's nothing like a good suicide song to make everybody feel cheery.
Especially in the middle of summer. There's nothing that says
That's right.
Better than a song about being alone.
Song of the summer.
It couldn't have been more dreary. Then he followed it up with a nice little up-tempo number called Claire, spelled without the E at the end, by the way.
That's right.
Daddy, Don't You Walk So Fast. These songs were all out in the summertime. Wayne Newton's song, followed by Donna Fargo, Happiest Girl in the Whole USA. As you moved into the fall, Michael Jackson's song about a rat, Ben. Some of the Daniel Boone's Beautiful Sunday. Osmond's Down by the Lazy River.
I almost forgot that one.
And how could we forget Sylvia's Mother by Dr. Hook and the Medicine Show.
Oh, one of the most awful songs of all time. Boy, they really had some losers back in 1972. But they had a lot of great ones, too. So.
Big hits. That was followed up with cover of the Rolling Stone.
That's right. That's right.
And the Jimmy Castor Bunch, Caveman, Troglodyte.
Troglodytes.
Just reached in and grabbed one.
One of the Butt Sisters.
All right, that's enough of that. Let's talk about some top albums of 1972. Yes, Close to the Edge.
Ooh, yes. And it was, yes, and it was a very good year for progressive rock bands. Genesis with Foxtrot, Emerson, Lake & Palmer with Trilogy, Living in the Past by Jethro Tull, and of course, and Seventh Sojourn by the Moody Blues. Made it a huge year for progressive rock, kind of solidified their place as being a real sound in music and really kind of upped the ante as far as classical music and what could be done with rock and roll music.
Bill Withers, Still Bill, Alice Cooper's School's Out, which for kids like us in school came out the perfect time of year. That song can't be played in middle of September. It has to be out around June 15th, doesn't it?
That's right. It's a great song.
Elton John, Honky Chateau, he had a couple of albums prior to that, but I really thought he solidified himself as a major performer with that album and
Absolutely.
Honky Cat, and it had such a different sound to it. Rocket Man, and you could tell he was destined for greatness, and we were right, because he was on his way.
Absolutely.
Neil Young's Harvest, that brought us Heart of Gold and many other songs, good album. Pink Floyd's Obscured by Clouds. Allman Brothers, Eat a Peach, America. We'll talk about them in a minute as one of our breakout artists. The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust by David Bowie.
Talk about a breakout. He'd had some good albums up till then, but boy, that just burst him right out, and it was right here in Cleveland where that took place.
Did it really?
Yes.
Glam rock was on its way. Deep Purple, Machine Head, they had a big hit with that album, and they would score a couple of singles with in 1973. The Rolling Stones had Exile on Main Street that year.
A two-record set, which was the first time they'd done that. And we've talked about terminal albums in the past. We've named a few of them. This is another one. Boy, put your boots on if you're going to listen to that one, because it's a tough one. But spectacular music.
Couple of breakout artists that year, the Eagles and Steely Dan. They shared the same manager, Irving Azoff.
That's right.
Neil Diamond's Hot August Night, that live album. And Loggins and Messina, they had recorded earlier, but the Loggins and Messina album was starting to hit with...
Your Mama Don't Dance?
Got it. Chicago 5, that was the Wood album, right?
That's right.
Saturday in the Park?
Saturday in the Park, State of the Union. That's where they really started to find a little bit of softer side, though. A few of the songs were a little bit more soft than they had in the past.
Features one of my favorites, dialogue, that old back and forth between Pete Cetera and Terry Kath.
Are you optimistic about the way that things are going?
No, I never, ever think of it at all.
Don't you ever worry when you see what's going down?
Well, I'm proud of my business, that is no business at all.
When it's time to function as a feeling human being, will your bachelor of arts help you?
Breakout artists, 1972. They may have recorded a few years earlier. They might have gotten together, or they might have been signed. But when we first really started hearing these artists, we knew that 1972 was going to be a fantastic year. For America, the trio, Sons of U.S. Air Force veterans based in London, Had a Horse with No Name, I Need You, Ventura Highway, all in 1972.
That's right.
On the first part of the journey, I was looking at all the life. There were plants and birds and rocks and things. There were sand and hills and rain. The first thing I met was a fly with a buzz and the sky with no clouds. The heat was hot and the ground was dry, but the air was full of sound. I've been through the desert on a horse with no name. It felt good to be out of the rain. In the desert, you can remember.
They had the big hit. They had a few in '70s and then kind of tailed off after '76 or so, kind of like Elton John. You hit that peak and then...
The one thing I realized about them is when I saw them out at Blossom Music Center one time, was that it's amazing how many of their songs sounded alike. So, you know, they were just one of those groups that just had a certain sound, and you plugged it in, you went, and you either liked it or you didn't. And it was a good sound, and it made a lot of big hits. And I think their greatest hits package is still selling a lot of records. So they did okay.
I enjoyed America, but like John Denver, the hits kind of stopped coming after a while. Even the Carpenters, they had a huge string of hits. And for touring and writing, it's just a real grind.
Right.
Everybody's got their own things going on, issues, personal issues or whatever. So you could kind of see where late 70s, something like disco could get a stronghold, because some of these artists, even Elton John, kind of tailed off. They got tired.
They wanted
to do something else, or they broke up. And we were kind of in a holding pattern in 1976 and '77, waiting for something else to happen. And it did with disco.
Yeah, it sure did. Yes, absolutely.
Jim Croce, the Philadelphia native, you don't mess around with Jim, operator, in the fall of 1972. There's a fellow who was a hard-working man and only would live another year or so before that tragic plane crash in 73.
How sad that was, but he did put out some really fantastic stuff, and this was the start of it right here.
Uptown got its hustlers, the Bowery got its bumps. 42nd Street got Big Jim Walker, he a bull-shooting son of a gun. Yeah, he big and dumb as a man can come, but he's stronger than a country horse. And when the bad folks all get together at night, you know they all call Big Jim Ball just because. And they say you don't tug on Superman's cape, you don't spit into the wind, you don't pull a mask off an old Lone Ranger, and you don't around with Jim.
New artist, 1972, one of our early featured artists, the Eagles. Frankie, what a great group that was.
Fantastic band, and like you said, we talked about them at length, and they just are tremendous. They have a fantastic catalog, and to think it all started in 1972. They really didn't produce that for that many years, probably in their prime about 8 years, but look at the catalog that they came up with in that short amount of time.
Jackson Brown, another one of our breakout artists and soon-to-be featured artists on our show. Frankie, what do you think about Jackson?
He's one of the few people from that time period that I never got to see live, but I've heard he's excellent, and of course we all know how good he can be, because he went out and did a live album right out of the can when he put out Running on Empty, mm-hmm. which was a tremendous album, and it was all new stuff at the time.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without crying. Now I want to understand. I have done I have one.
You Love the Thunder, Loadout, Stay. Also in 1972, a former member of Velvet Underground, Lou Reed, his second release, Transformer, was produced by somebody known as David Bowie and featured Walk on the Wild Side, which would be a big hit the next year. What'd you think of Lou Reed, the future Rock and Roll Hall of Famer?
Well, it's kind of hard to say. A lot of people have trouble with him being in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame twice, and he is one of my personal heroes, but I have to say I feel the same way about him. When he's in there twice and people like Todd Rundgren, Jay Giles Band aren't in there the first time, I kind of start to wonder about it. But that doesn't mean that he didn't have a great career, and I think that Transformer was the one that put him over the top and made his career. He was ready at the time to give up rock and roll music, and just happened that RCA Records had David Bowie on their in their lineup, and so David came to his house and said, "We'd love to have you in the group, and I'll even produce your next album." And that's how it all came about.
I like the unselfishness among talented artists like David Bowie, like Todd Rundgren. They are happy to share their insight and maybe their songwriting too with other artists who
exactly
who can really benefit from their expertise. Another band we know well in Cleveland, the Raspberries, Eric Carmen's group, Go All the Way, number 5 in 1972. What'd you think about that local band, the Raspberries, Frankie?
Oh, what a terrific band. One of those Cleveland groups that, a lot like Michael Stanley Band, had some minor hits but never made the big time, and it's a real shame that they weren't able to blow the lid off and become a big national hit.
The way they stormed out of the box with that song, you thought that they were destined for greatness. I did anyway. That song sounded like nothing else I heard on the radio at the time. It was just a great rock and roll tune, but it had enough pop in it for the masses to enjoy it
absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Dan Fogelberg, he really didn't hit it so well with his first album, but the follow-up that dropped called Souvenirs, which included Part of the Plan, was produced by Joe Walsh and did very well. But the first time we heard the folk rock singer from Peoria, Illinois, it was 1972. That was Dan Fogelberg. An interesting artist he was, and passed away way too young. Speaking of Joe Walsh, another Cleveland favorite, he and the James Gang kind of parted ways. Joe was asked to join Humble Pie after the departure of Peter Frampton.
That's right, Peter Frampton left.
Turned him down, came out with the album Barnstorm, which was released in October and remains a cult classic with the song Turned to Stone. He had greater success the next year with The Smoker You Drink, you know, with a
Rocky Mountain Way
and Meadows.
Absolutely.
Talked about Peter Frampton, his solo efforts after Humble Pie. He worked with Ringo Starr and Billy Preston on his debut album called Wind of Change. And we will have Peter Frampton in our spotlight in just a couple of episodes when we feature 1976 with that Frampton Comes Alive album. I had no idea who he was at the time, but everybody in the audience sure did. And I thought, now who is this guy? Everybody knows all the songs he's playing.
Absolutely.
And I don't know any of them.
Yeah, because it took place at the Winterland in San Francisco, and he was basically known in two places. He was known in San Francisco and the Bay Area, and he was also known here in Cleveland. In fact, for a better time part of a year, he was part of the almost the house band for the Agora downtown. So,
Steeler's Wheel, the band from Paisley, Scotland, which featured Jerry Rafferty. They had a couple of big hits, Stuck in the Middle, and I don't think they did great as a band. That's why he decided it's time to move on with Baker Street.
Oh, what a record that was.
Our featured artist this week, Steely Dan. 1972 was their year for the breakout album, Can't Buy a Thrill. The jazz fusion band, Walter Becker on guitars, bass, backing vocals, Donald Fagen lead vocals and guitars. They had Jeff Skunk Baxter in the band. They started out as a band that would tour, and then they decided Walter and Donald Fagen were not touring anymore. After 1974, they became a studio band.
Exactly.
We'll be right back. Rock and Roll Hall of Famers 2001, and started out as touring musicians for Jay and the Americans.
That's right.
In fact, Donald Fagen liked to use aliases quite often. His alias for working with Jay and the Americans on stage, and also he's mentioned on Can't Buy a Thrill album, is Tristan Fabriani.
I love that. That's great.
Donald Fagen's a very interesting dude. He wrote an autobiography. The album Nightfly was really good. It featured the song IGY, which he still doesn't tell exactly what it means, but it's generally regarded as the International Geophysical Year.
That's right. Yep.
The core lineup featured Baxter, who went on to join the Doobie Brothers after Steely Dan became just that studio group. Denny Diaz, who appeared on the follow-up albums like Kitty Light and The Royal Scam in Asia as well. They reformed in 1974, you know, with the two of them, Walter and Donald, and a bunch of musicians. I think that's probably the way they wanted to go. They would
exactly
have a bunch of guys from L.A. Maybe it was their perfectionism in recording. They wanted to sound just a certain way. They liked the music of the guitar work of Mark Knopfler on Sultans of Swing. So later on, when they were putting together Gaucho, they enlisted Mark Knopfler's guitar work. They really, really liked it, they said, and ended up using 40 seconds worth of his music.
Exactly. That's what they used to do. Deconstruct their songs and plug in solos where needed.
Gary Katz would produce all the big albums. And as an A&R executive, would also sign Jim Croce, Chaka Khan, and Jimmy Buffett, staples of the 70s and 80s
right.
And more. Then in the summer of 74, Ricky Don't Lose That Number peaked at number 4. That was their highest peaking single. Do It Again hit number 6 in 1972.
You kind of scared yourself, you turned wrong. But if you have a change of heart, Ricky, don't lose that number. You don't want to call nobody else. Send it off in a letter to yourself.
So they weren't touring Steely Dan, but they were putting out an album pretty much every year. Kitty Light released in March of 75, featuring Black Friday, Bad Sneakers, My Favorite, Dr. Wu. The album features soon-to-be Toto members David Paich on keyboards and drummer Jeff Porcaro, and did very well. Hit number 13 on both the UK and the US album charts. Kitty Light, what do you think?
Love that. In fact, it's my favorite of all their records. They didn't like it for a very strange reason, the engineering on it. They said that they paid for all kinds of fancy speakers and a Dolby broadcast system that was supposed to be state-of-the-art, and only they would know, but it didn't measure up to their standards, and I don't hear it, but they sure heard it.
The Royal Scam was next. It didn't do so well in the singles charts, but Don't Take Me Alive, Kid Charlemagne, a couple of my favorites.
aimless pedestrian. I know you're out there with rage in your eyes and your megaphones, saying all is forgiven. Mad dog surrender. How can I answer? A man of my mind can't.
Timothy B. Schmidt played bass on the title cut and would join the Eagles later on. See how they were kind of tied together, those two groups, weren't they?
That's for sure, and a lot of FM activity, even if they weren't hitting the charts, they were definitely being played.
Then in 1977 came Aja, spelled A-J-A. My favorite from the album, Deacon Blues, the last cut on side one, if you have the album, which I do. I've got the CD as well, and why not? That 7-minute, 33-second masterpiece, the B-side, not too shabby either, Frankie, Home at Last. Deacon Blues originally was recorded without the use of a saxophonist, and it was added later by legendary sax man Peter Christlieb, who you may know from his work with Doc Severinsen and the Tonight Show Band for many years. He said it only took him two takes, which, working with Steely Dan, was unheard of, knowing their perfectionism. He said they liked take one, they gave him another one, and he was done in a half an hour. Funny thing, though, legendary sax man Tom Scott did not play on any of the songs except for Black Cow, the opening cut on the album, but he did arrange the horns for every song for Aja. Tom Scott, you know his work, though, for other things like Listen to What the Man Said and another number one song, Do You Think I'm Sexy by Rod Stewart. He has worked with everybody, Richie Havens, Carole King, Dan Fogelberg, Barbara Streisand, and Josh Groban lately. And Frankie, speaking of great saxophonists, we were saddened to hear about the death of Alto Reed, born Thomas Neal Cartmell. He passed away just last week at the end of 2020 at age 72. He toured with the Bob Seger Silver Bullet Band for more than 40 years, and his unforgettable work on songs like Turn the Page and Old Time Rock and Roll, just outstanding. In addition to his tremendous work with Seger, he also performed with the likes of Ted Nugent, Grand Funk, Little Feat, Fog Hat, George Thorogood, Spencer Davis, and Dave Mason. Alto Reed will certainly be missed, won't he?
Absolutely.
Steely Dan's Aja that year was up for a Grammy for Best Album against some stiff competition like Rumors from Fleetwood Mac, which won, also The Eagles' Hotel California, the Star Wars soundtrack, John Williams, which at the time, John had only won one Grammy for his work on Jaws, but now has amassed over 35 of them and 5 Academy Awards as well. He did not win, nor did James Taylor with his album JT. But Steely Dan came close with Aja, and they have been nominated in a couple of other categories over the years, and also for songs like Ricky Don't Lose That Number and FM, and then later on for the album Gaucho. But Aja was in the running for Album of the Year, did not win the Grammy Award that year. Gaucho, released in 1980, later part of the year, featuring New York musicians this time around. That took a little while to come together after a little delay, and back then we were hoping for an album every year or every year and a half. We knew they weren't touring, so where's Steely Dan? 78 came and went, 79, 80, and then finally in the late 1980, it did happen. They did want to take a little break from songwriting. They were, of course, held up a bit by their obsession, their perfectionism with the recording technique. At least 42 session musicians were used for this album, but it was worth it. Certified platinum and featured Time Out of Mind and A19.
So young and weary.
Now, some of the songs may or may not have been inspired by drug use, Time Out of Mind, and
Hey 19.
Hey 19. I don't think the 70s would have been the same without them. I know in my music collection they wouldn't have been. For a guy like me who was a top 40 guy, I kind of expanded my musical repertoire. I started listening to albums more because I could afford to buy them.
Right.
I put the singles away and started listening to Gaucho and the whole album, Pretzel Logic and Katie.
And they're a great one to do that with because their albums really do hang together as a whole. And to be honest with you, they pretty much made up two different genres that didn't exist before. With Asia, they kind of started the whole smooth jazz scene. And of course, Gaucho is known for yacht rock.
Yes, it is. After the breakup of Steely Dan, Walter Becker stopped smoking and drinking and moved his family to Maui.
Yeah, one of the reasons that they broke up in the first place was he was having a lot of trouble with drugs and alcohol, and in fact there was a huge settlement into one of his girlfriends at the time. I think there was a $19 million lawsuit against him at one point that finally got settled, and at that point he went to Hawaii, like you said, and got his life together, and I think that allowed him and Donald to get back together again.
Walter did some side work and some producing, but not a lot in the music scene until they got back together again. And Donald Fagen, a little more active as a solo artist. Walter Becker passed away in 2017. One of the concerts I regret not seeing was when they were in town recently in Akron at the university there, maybe 5 years ago, maybe more. They were going to play the whole Gaucho album, and then the next night, the whole Asia album, and I could make one night, I couldn't make them both, and the one I wanted to see was Asia, so I couldn't see either. I was going to Vegas instead, so I probably saw some lounge act, like an Elvis impersonator there, or Celine Dion, but I always felt gypped out of that. I really wanted to see them. I even had tickets for that show.
That would have been a great show to see. I'm sorry we missed it.
Jeff Baxter went on to work with the Doobie Brothers, and now is an interesting story. He is a defense contractor and works with Congress on missile defense. He takes existing technologies and he tries to see how these kinds of things could work against us here in the United States. He kind of stumbled on that career from his days as a producer and engineer and performer, and then moved on to Congress and helps them out. Something like using our airplanes against us in 9/11. That's the kind of thing he can help Congress with his expertise, his knowledge. And so he's a top defense consultant since 2005. There's our featured artist and one of my all-time favorites, Steely Dan. And next time around on Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations, Spotlight Year, 1970. And our featured artist will be The Who. And Frankie, you know a little something about them, don't you?
I love The Who. Can't wait to talk about them.
1970 is going to be the year between the Tommy soundtrack and the gigantic album Who's Next. But we'll touch on some of the newer artists of 1970, the top albums, and what else is going on in 1970. Should be a very interesting conversation because I was only 10 years old, but I really enjoyed listening to music that back then. I remember that was one of the first times I, you know, it's kind of, you know, put yourself in your room and listen to all that was going on in 1970 as we began a fabulous decade of music, the 1970s. Thanks so much for joining me, Frankie.
Thanks for having me.
Sure to be a good one. Thanks for listening to Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations.